Hi, this is Austin Hill. Hey, thanks for checking out this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. Now, you can hear our program live weekday morning, 6 till 8 Central Time. There are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows. They're available online. Our web address, of course, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
Yeah, welcome to it. Thursday morning underway from the Faith Radio Network. I am Austin Hill, honored to be with you weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of your day. Hope you're staying dug out and the debris is cleared from your path. And give thanks for the person who does the snow removal from the road, right? Give thanks for the person who actually has shovel the driveway or the walkway or the sidewalk out and about. This is hard work, and these are difficult times. Coming up later this morning, we check in with a gentleman who's, you'll know this name immediately when I say this, and you know his voice. He's been on a Christian radio broadcast for, oh my goodness, most of his life, quite frankly. I want to say in one form or another, he's been on Christian broadcasting programs for the bigger part of 30 years. Bob Lapine. Bob Lapine. He's with the Family Life Today program. He is the host and the anchor of that broadcast. And he'll join us to talk about the Weekend to Remember getaway events that Family Life Today is doing for married couples. Family Life Today committed to upholding and nurturing and fortifying, if you will, the marriage institution, the institution of a man, a male man being married to a female woman, and making it last for a lifetime. So Bob Lapine joins us to talk about the state of marriage in America and what Family Life Today is doing to try to improve that. You've heard some about the very, very serious case of the 70-year-old grandmother in Richland, Washington, that owns the flower shop, right? Heard a little bit about that. So there is a lady who owns a flower shop in a small rural town in the state of Washington. It's called Richland. And she has got the state government of Washington coming down on her in a pretty, pretty amazing way, saying that if you do not begin servicing lesbian and gay weddings with your floral services, if you don't go out and cater gay and lesbian weddings, if you will, we will run you out of business. We will bankrupt you from your personal life savings. We'll take everything you got. That's based on the decision of a Superior Court judge in the state of Washington. In just about half an hour from now, our great friend Alex Kincaid, who is a former prosecutor herself, she now runs a private practice law firm advising families and individuals and private companies, but also churches and nonprofit ministries on how to protect yourself from those who would rush in, swoop in, and make a discrimination claim against you, and even protecting yourself from your local, city, county, and state governments that will come after you. She was with us weighing in earlier last year on the pastors who had the city of Houston in Texas, the mayor and the city council there, demanding the pastors hand over transcripts of their sermons. She weighed in on that. She weighed in on our program talking about the couple, the husband-wife pastors, in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, of all places, that had the city threatening to arrest them if they did not begin performing same-sex weddings. So Alex Kincaid, attorney and former prosecutor, weighing in at about 6:35 Central Time on this one. Who is most proactive, most ambitious and aggressive as far as redefining marriage and, quite frankly, redefining church theology as it pertains to sexuality and the definition of marriage? Interesting reports from the Christian Science Monitor just days ago indicated that it's millennial evangelicals, evangelical Christians, not the liberal mainline Protestant denominations, it's people in the evangelical church who demographically belong to the millennial age demographic, who are most aggressively pushing to redefine church doctrine and church teaching on sexuality. As we continue, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll check in with Chris Martin. He is a prolific author and columnist and a blogger. He is the self-described millennial evangelical. We'll have him weigh in and offer his thoughts on this report from the Christian Science Monitor when we come back. Redefining Church Teaching. We'll continue in just a moment. It's now 6:08 Central Time. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us.
Getting your day started, connecting faith to life. Back to Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's now 6:10 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network, and I am Austin Hill. Here weekday morning, 6 till 8, striving to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful as we connect our Christian faith, our longstanding historic Christian faith, the truth of the Scriptures, and we connect those things to the issues of our time. Yes, our personal lives, our families, our marriages, and our kids and grandkids, our churches, but the broader culture and the big world that we live in as well. Are millennial evangelical Christians in America pushing to change longstanding church teaching on sexuality and the definition of marriage? I noted a report from the Christian Science Monitor newspaper the other day. By the way, let me just clarify. The Christian Science Monitor, while it bears the name of a particular church, a particular religious sect, if you will, the Christian Science Church, the Christian Science Monitor in and of itself is its own distinct newspaper, online and print newspaper publication, and I would say a very reputable journalistic publication at that. But here's part of what is written in this report. As a group, evangelicals remain by far those most opposed to redefining marriage in the U.S. Still, many of them have been grappling with the swiftly moving cultural changes that have transformed attitudes about lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people. Joining us on the guest line now to talk about it here at Faith Radio, we have Chris Martin, the self-described millennial evangelical. Chris Martin, welcome back to the program. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Austin. I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good, thanks. You saw this report from the Christian Science Monitor. It is making some claims specifically and directly about your generation. Give us your thoughts on this.
Yeah, when I first read the article, I was a little skeptical just because I'm always I always want to look where people are getting their data and that sort of a thing. And I started reading the article, and we kind of start with a little vignette, little story about a pastor who moved from Chicago to Portland to kind of more acclimate his welcoming and open church, as he describes it. And then they get to the stats, which I was most interested in. They say here, in 2004, 11% of white evangelical Protestants, so these are evangelicals, like you said, not mainline, expressed support for allowing gays and lesbians to marry. So 2004, 11%. 2014, a younger generation of evangelicals had pushed this figure to 21%. So in 10 years, we're looking at an almost increase by 100%, double. And the stats are true. I mean, it's right. They come from Pew Research Forum. I mean, it's very reputable. It's true. Mm-hmm. And so what the church has to do is they have to start thinking, okay, this attitude exists. What are we going to do about it? Now, one caution I want to give you and our listeners is this. These stats are for millennials and for all Christians, but we're talking specifically about millennials here, mm-hmm. Coming in support of same-sex marriage. These stats are not showing how many millennials or evangelicals think homosexuality is or is not sinful. And some may not see the difference between same-sex marriage being allowed and homosexuality being sinful. But I think there's a growing group, especially among young evangelicals, to divorce the idea of what the church defines as marriage and what the government defines as marriage.
Yes.
And kind of forsake what the government defines as marriage and only care about what the church defines as marriage. So I think this inflation of numbers, especially among millennials, I mean, in 2003, 51% of millennials supported same-sex marriage. In 2014, 67. So it was a 16% jump.
Right.
And I think some of that certainly is because evangelicals are finding ways to say homosexuality is not sinful and we should be okay with it. But I think part of it may also be, the question I would like to see asked is what percent of evangelicals think homosexuality is sinful or is not sinful?
I appreciate the distinctions that you're making here. Chris Martin he blogs as the Millennial Evangelical. He's on our guest line here on the Faith Radio Network. It strikes me, and rightly or wrongly, I'm not making any value judgment or moral judgment on this one, but it strikes me, Chris Martin, that there are a lot of people, millennials and even older generations, you know, your parents' generation, so to speak, there's a lot of evangelical Christians who are saying, why must the governments be involved in defining marriage for us in the first place? Now, of course, that's a shift from the previous decade or two, where evangelicals turned out in droves to pass ballot initiatives that used the power of government to define marriage precisely the way they wanted it to. But I think it seems to me that there are more and more, I see more and more evangelicals of all demographics, especially the millennials, saying, what difference does it make if a lesbian or gay couple has the same registration for their relationship at the county recorder's office that my spouse and I do. That's a matter of identifying property rights and financial commitments and those kinds of things. My church will define for me what a real marriage is. My church is blessed because the church says it is, because God's word says it is, because God himself has blessed my marriage.
Right.
The county recorder's office or the secretary of state's office does not instill that blessing. Is that, in your view, is that a part of it? Are people beginning to maybe be a little more discerning between the healthy limitations and boundaries of government?
Yeah. Oh, sure. That's exactly. I think that's a huge part of it. I mean, even me, I'm 24. I got married in June of 2013, so not quite 2 years. And I was shocked at how little pomp and circumstance went along with the government side of things. I mean, it's literally just a legal transaction. So even me, I'm wrestling with this idea of how much, you know, I think there's a much more important battle to be fought for the sake of our churches on the issue of the sinfulness of homosexuality and what the Bible says about that and how we interpret the Bible to get us to a point where we may not think it's sinful.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a much bigger and more important battle than the legality of marriage for people who are the same sex.
Okay. We're breaking this down into a whole bunch of different categories. And this is good. Chris Martin, stay on the line. Chris Martin is the Millennial Evangelical, and he's on our guest line. We'll sort this out in further detail when we come back. It's now 6:17 Central Time. This is the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. We're glad you're with us. Stay right there. It's 6:19 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill. Still to come, a look at the flower shop owner in Richland, Washington, who is effectively being run out of business by her state government of Washington because she won't supply flowers to gay and lesbian weddings. And, we'll get into that at about 6:35. Right now, Chris Martin, he is the Millennial Evangelical. He blogs and publishes at millennialevangelical.com. He's on our guest line here at Faith Radio. Chris, you're breaking things down and sorting things out in ways that I believe need to happen. It sounds like part of what you're getting at here is asking, hey, do you think marriage should be redefined by the government, is not the same thing as asking, do lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered persons have a place in the church? We kind of throw all these questions and concepts and ideas in one big vat. You're sorting them out and saying they're not all the same thing. How would you break down things even further?
Yeah, so I think it's really important, and I hope to blog about this soon, because I think people think there's two sides. People think there's two sides. You're either completely okay with homosexuality in your church, and you don't think it's sinful, and you find ways to define that biblically. So that's one side. And then you have another side that's, like, often painted as hating homosexuals because they think homosexuality is sinful. And I think what we need to do is find a way to communicate, conservative evangelicals like you and me need to communicate, look, we think homosexuality, like, homosexual acts between sexual acts between two people of the same sex is sinful. We think that because we think the Bible says that. But that doesn't mean we don't like you. That doesn't mean we don't love you. We do love you, and we want you to be part of our our faith community, and we want to work through those things with you, just like we're going to work through other things that everyone has to deal with. And you know, a lot of people just don't like the idea that such a lifestyle is sinful. And you have to work through that on the ground level. So I think we need to start thinking about the issues one by one and not just for or against homosexuality, because is orientation sinful, or is that okay? Is it just the acts? And then you've got the
legality. And by the way, different churches. Sure, and you know as well as I do, different church traditions have different interpretations on orientation versus act, and depending on what church you walk into, they break those things down in different ways.
Yeah, exactly, and how a church runs itself as far as, like, should homosexuals, regardless of if they're practicing or just oriented that way, should we have them in the church leadership? Should we admit them as members? I mean, that stuff is so hard to regulate on a large scale, because churches, especially in denominations and organizations that are more autonomous, like let churches govern themselves, it's such a case-by-case thing. Obviously, people have views, and I know what I believe about this issue, but I think what we have to do is we have to prayerfully and lovingly engage people who are same-sex attracted and show them the biblical truth as we see it, that acting out homosexuality is sinful. But I think what the church needs to concern itself most with, see, a lot of people say that the church has to adapt or die, that if the church doesn't adapt to this cultural issue, it's going to die. And what we see is declining numbers in American churches. But the thing is, I think the church, what it needs to do in order to not die, which I'm confident that it's not going to die, I'm not too concerned, I'm not going all Chicken Little here. I think what the church needs to do is focus on what it was purposed to do, which is accomplish the Great Commission. And I think cultural stuff will work itself out. Now, that's not to say that this stuff's not important. It is. But I think what the church needs to do is less run around with its hands up in the air, like, what are we going to do about this? And more say, let's make disciples and let's love people and stick to the Bible as honestly and truthfully and faithfully as we can.
All right. Chris Martin, he's the millennial evangelical. He wades in from time to time with that millennial perspective. And he does that, of course, in a very millennial, high-tech sort of fashion. You're on a computer. You're talking to us through a computer right now, right? It's not a telephone, per se?
Yeah, it's weird. I was talking to someone in the break, and I was like, it's some kind of voodoo, I think, because I'm using my computer and speaking through, like, a podcast microphone, a radio microphone probably similar to what you're using. But I think it's calling you through my phone.
Yeah.
But when I, like, look at my phone home screen, nothing is up. So I don't know how it's working, but you and I are talking, and I think it sounds good.
Well, if anybody's going to figure out how that thing is working, it's going to be you. The weight's on your shoulders there, pal.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
I mean, all the tech stuff is supposed to be intuitive to you. You're a millennial, for heaven's sakes, right? I mean, you were born with this technology in your hand, weren't you, Chris?
Yeah, I posted a picture the other day on social media of all things, right? Me being a millennial.
Crazy.
My dad worked from home the whole time I was growing up, and I was sitting on his lap at a computer at age 4.
I love it. Chris, thanks very much. We will talk again soon, and have a great day. We appreciate you being with us.
It was good chatting with you.
It's now 6:25 Central Time. Imagine that, a laptop at age 4. Shocking! We'll debate the merits of that coming up later this morning. As we continue, a look ahead to the midday here on Faith Radio. We'll tell you about it coming up next. It's now 6:26 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill, here weekday mornings 6 till 8. At 12 noon Central Time, our program is called Connecting Faith. Yesterday on Connecting Faith, host Joe Rathmanner interviewed Dr. Michelle Anthony about her new book, Becoming a Spiritually Healthy Family. Here's part of that discussion.
God's a storyteller, and he gets to be the director, the producer, the writer, all of that, because it's his. And we play a part in it. It's not our story. But I'm tempted to think that it's my story because in my life, I'm in every scene, right? So it's tempting for me to want to take control of the script because I'm tempted by Dana me to see that that is my story. So instead, if I see it as God's story, I see him sitting in the director's chair. I like to envision that every single morning he drops off a script for me to play, that he had me in mind when he wrote that script because of his great love for me.
So part of running that script then as a parent, it seems like sometimes we like to throw our own thoughts of what life should be, what our life would be, onto them. And in fact, when I'm reading your section about being a driver parent, that being one of the dysfunctions, I think about that script writing, and I have to remind myself that the script that God has written for my children are so different than the script that he's written for me, and I need to be attentive to that as well. How do we get to that point as parents where we're kind of looking at God's plan for our children instead of our plan for our children?
Yeah, you know, you're right. The driver parent has a lot of steam, right? They're just, they are driving. They have goals, and they're going to accomplish those goals. Either they are a driver themselves, or maybe they didn't get to accomplish everything in their life, and so they're going to make jolly well sure that their children get to accomplish the things that they never had the opportunity to. But either way, those driver parents are really susceptible to leaving that script behind every day because they just get up and go and they plow through their agenda for the day. And while they're not the only ones who want to control the things in their children's life, because we also have the micromanaging parents and any of us on any given day, we have to have that aha moment where we actually say, we are not in control of really the things that matter most to us. If we think about it, whether or not our parents or our children will come down, or ourselves will come down with cancer or some other form of a disease, whether or not war will break out in our nation or the region that we live in, whether or not I get in a car accident today, whether or not the stock market will crash and I lose everything. You know, if you think about the people we love and the things that are important to us, you know, whether or not I can become pregnant or not, these are the things that matter the most to us in life, and yet these things are not in our control. So when we have that aha moment that it's a fantasy, it's just a grand illusion that I'm in control, I think it's easier to let go. Because we're not really letting go. When we actually unclench our fingers, we find that there's actually nothing in our hand after all.
That's from yesterday's episode of Connecting Faith with host Joe Rathmanner. On today's program, Joe interviews author Lee Strobel about his book, The Case for Grace. A journalist explores the evidence of transformed love. That's Connecting Faith with host Joe Rathmanner today, 12 noon Central Time on the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. It's now 6:31. I'm Austin Hill. What can we learn from a 70-year-old grandmother who's being run out of her flower shop business in the state of Washington? There are lessons for churches and ministries. We'll tell you about it coming up after the news.
News you can use. Connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Good morning. It's now 6:35 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Glad you're with us. Earlier this week, we reported to you that a judge in the state of Washington has ruled that Baronelle Stutzman, a grandmother, 70 years of age, and a flower shop owner, has to provide floral services to people's weddings, even when their weddings violate her Christian beliefs. Ms. Stutzman is on the hot seat for declining to provide floral services to a gay wedding. Joining us to talk about this rather extraordinary decision from a judge and how we can prepare ourselves should similar circumstances come in our pathway, Alex Kincaid. She is a former prosecutor. She practices law in the states of Oregon and Idaho. She's in the Pacific Northwest where this event took place. She's expert on law when it comes to nonprofit ministries, churches, and private businesses. Alex Kincaid, welcome back to our program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Austin. Thanks for having me.
Good to be with you. You've watched this unfold. You're pretty close to Ms. Stutzman and the situation with her flower shop, Arlene's Flower Shop, there in Richland, Washington, I believe is the town. What has been your impression as you've watched these details unfold?
Well, you know, one thing is clear, and that is that this movement is strong. people are organized, they're going forward, and we in the Christian community need to be aware of that and plan for it in our businesses. So, you know, this is an event where someone's faith is being challenged in terms of being able to act on it. In fact, that's what the Superior Court judge said. Our religious beliefs are protected, but not necessarily our actions based on those beliefs. And this is extremely concerning for us in the Christian community.
That is exactly how other people have analyzed this. They're saying, well, okay, this judge in the state of Washington has affirmed that one can believe as they will, but don't act as you will according to those beliefs. Some beliefs are just socially unacceptable, I guess. Is that a correct interpretation, would you say?
I would say it is, which flies in the face of our First Amendment, you know, our very first item in the Bill of Rights. This is why America became America in the first place, so that we could have free exercise of our religious belief. And I emphasize that free exercise portion, which includes taking action, not just having the beliefs.
Alex Kincaid, it strikes me that as I watch this, as a non-lawyer, as a layperson, if you will, well, it sure seems like this state attorney general there in Washington really went out of his way to zero in on this elderly lady, Ms. Stutzman, who owns this flower shop in a pretty small town in Washington. And my understanding is he found out about this on Facebook, and the idea that an elected state attorney general is trolling Facebook to try to find people to sue is rather extraordinary in and of itself, if that's the case. But it just seems like they're trying to make an example of this elderly lady. Am I reading in too much into this, do you think?
Not at all. I don't think at all. I think, you know, it's extremely clear at this point that people have an agenda, and they are bringing their own personal belief systems into that agenda, and they are going to target those who are in opposition to that agenda. So, you know, my question to some of your listeners is, do you know what the laws are in your states? Could you potentially be targeted like this poor lady was in Washington State? Because it can happen anywhere. And people in the gay and lesbian community are passionate about their cause, and they are passionate about forcing it onto those of us who maybe don't feel the same way. And that doesn't mean that we can't love them and exercise our Christian faith in a way that is in line with being kind and thoughtful to other people. But if you're going to hold your ground and not condone a gay marriage, do you know what you're going to do if you then become the target of this agenda?
Yeah, that's very well stated. Alex Kincaid from KincaidLaw.com. She is an attorney, former prosecutor. She advises business owners and churches and nonprofit ministries on how to prepare for a variety of things, including situations similar to that of Ms. Stutzman. What do you say to the small business owner? Let's start with that. What do you say to the small business owner who is a Christian who maybe strikes a similar approach that Ms. Stutzman does? She apparently had gay men and lesbian women who are regular customers of hers. She carried on a good relationship and served their needs with her flower shop for many, many years. But she drew a line in the sand and said, you know, I love you, client, but I'm not going to bless your wedding or your marriage. What do you say to that small business owner who has a similar approach to these kinds of things? Are they at risk? What do you tell them?
Well, they may very well be. And I would say, first of all, do you know what the laws are in your state? Do you have a similar law like this? This is a state law. This isn't a federal law. This is a Washington state law. Do you know what the law is? Have you been involved enough and paying attention to what's going on in your own community in terms of what the rules are? And once you know what the rules are, have you gone to a lawyer, a professional who can help you understand how to best set up your business and best set up a policy, maybe even a written policy, on how you're going to deal with these issues so that you will have a better chance at defending yourself if you're ever in court?
Yeah, okay. How about on the – it strikes me, and I'm a media person, obviously, but it strikes me that a lot of this has to do with public relations. There's the court of law, but then there's also the court of public opinion, and I think a lot of small business owners are just not prepared for somebody showing up at the door and saying, will you do this and that? And if the person behind the counter says no, then they run to the local newspaper or TV, radio station, whatever, and it becomes a big, ugly news story. And the small business owner don't know, they don't even know what hit them. What about on the PR front? How does a business owner need to be prepared for that?
Well, I think a lot of small business owners aren't aware that there are individuals or companies that actually specialize in protecting you in these situations. So if you want to go an extra step, you might consider figuring out what company or person you could at least consult with on how to properly handle these situations, because there's a lot of psychology and, as you said, you know, public relations types of ways that help you combat when you become the target of this type of situation.
Sure. Alex Kincaid from Kincaid Law on our guest line here on Faith Radio. Let's shift gears here a little bit. Let's talk about the pastor or the person who heads up a nonprofit, shall we say, parachurch ministry organization. They're subject to, in some cases, a little bit different law when it comes to their hiring practices or even being compelled to provide certain kinds of services and whatnot. But similar things like what is happening to Ms. Stutzman and her for-profit flower business have happened and will continue to happen to churches and nonprofit ministries. What do you advise people of in the nonprofit realm?
Well, the congregation needs to pull together, and you need to sit down, hold meetings, discuss these issues within your church, have open communication, and talk about what your policies are, first of all. Do you even know what your rules and your policies are within your own church? And once you have settled on that, what is your plan of action? Who will be the spokesperson? Do other members in the church know that if the media shows up at your door accusing you of, you know, hating gays and lesbians or doing something that would fall within the realm of anti-discrimination laws, who is your spokesperson going to be? And do members of the church know to say, you know what, we have someone that you should talk to about that? Stop the conversation before you say something that's going to get blown up in the media mm-hmm. and used, in a horrible way against you. And let that spokesperson deal with the people that are knocking at your door and trying to get a statement.
Mm. Kind of let me take a number and have somebody get back to you sort of approach, in other words.
It absolutely should be, and there's nothing wrong with saying we have a spokesperson for our church. You need to speak with our pastor. You need to speak with, you know, someone who's in charge to talk to you about what our policy is. I'm not that person. I'm a member of the church. There's nothing wrong with saying that.
Mm. Yeah, it's excellent advice. Alex Kincaid, find her at kincaidlaw.com. We've got her linked on our network website at myfaithradio.com. Some thoughts on this very sad situation involving an elderly lady who owns a flower shop in rural Washington and the trouble that has befallen her. Alex, thank you so much for what you do. Thanks for making some time for us this morning. We look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you, Austin. My pleasure.
It's now 6:45 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. It's Thursday. Glad you're with us. Okay, mornings 6 till 8 as we seek to connect faith to every area of our lives, our personal lives, our families, our marriages, our parenting endeavors, but also to the broader world that we live in and the events of our time. They really, really do matter. And no longer can we afford to ignore the issues of the day. Coming up later this morning into the next hour, we'll be checking in with Bob Lapine. Bob Lapine is a man that I had the privilege of speaking with earlier this week, probably for the first time. That's the first time I've ever spoken with him personally. He's been hosting a variety of different radio talk shows and radio programs on Christian talk radio for the bigger part of 30 years, and such a talented guy. And he and I have lots of mutual friends. We had quite a fun discussion about that. But Bob Lapine is perhaps most notably the anchor, the host, if you will, of the Family Life Today broadcast with Dennis Rainey. And Bob is going to join us to talk about what exactly was going on at the time that Family Life Today started. That was way back in 1992. Some of us remember that year. Some of us were alive to experience it. Anyway, Bob has this amazing story to tell about how our cultural landscape has shifted dramatically, especially on the issue of marriage. All the while, Family Life Today has been there trying to nurture and encourage the sustenance of the family unit, if you will, and also encourage a female woman and a male man being married together and nurturing and encouraging those relationships. And at the end of the day, the Family Life Today organization, they have these Weekend to Remember getaway events that they do. They set up in a nice hotel and in a variety of different cities around the country, I might add. And Christian couples and even engaged couples are invited to come out and participate in groups and one-on-one and individual efforts and really get some good fine-tuning with their relationships. So anyway, Bob Lapine joining us at about 7:10 this morning. I hope you'll stick around for that. Some very interesting news published this morning at Christianity Today, ChristianityToday.com. And let me just read to you this headline. I find this fascinating. Welcome to the golden age of global charity. Thanks to innovations in accountability, poverty-fighting efforts are flourishing around the world like never before. Now, does that sound – I mean, there's no way to interpret that except to say that that sounds like good news, right? I will tell you that about 3 weeks ago, a gentleman named Dr. Clint Jenkin, who is the he's a researcher, and he's the president of the Barna Group, the research firm, the Barna Group. George Barna, by the way, the guy who founded the Barna Group, he has nothing to do with the group anymore. He sold it. Dr. Clint Jenkin is the man that oversees the Barna Group. And Jenkin and company at the Barna Group, they published this fascinating roster of some of the biggest, most interesting developments of 2014. And they published the perceptions that American Christians have about those developments. And it was quite fascinating. I bring this up because Clint Jenkin made a big deal of it to point out that poverty around the world is being eradicated in ways that we have never, ever seen before. It is the condition, the impoverished conditions that people live in here in the domestically in the United States for those who are in poverty, but even around the world in the third world, those conditions are improving more rapidly than anybody ever imagined. However, Clint Jenkin pointed out, the vast majority of evangelical Christians in America don't believe it. And it was quite an interesting conversation. Now, if you wanted to go back and listen and hear Dr. Jenkin in his own words, well, you can go to myfaithradio.com and find the the audio and text of my discussion with Clint Jenkin. But it was just this absolute conundrum. He said people in America have got this notion in mind that poverty only gets worse. It never gets better. And some 67% of American evangelicals believe that poverty is getting worse, but it is not. And this is in no small part. Here's a factor of this that Christianity Today, their article, seems to ignore. I'm not sure why Christianity Today would not take this into consideration as they report this very good news today, that global poverty is actually decreasing. But one of the factors is that more and more countries around the world have adopted and embraced an American-style free market economic system. I mean, think about it. And I'm 51 years old. When I was a kid growing up, India was not an economic superpower. It most certainly is today. There is a rising middle class in India. And that's in no small part because their economic system, their financial system, has become more like America's, not less like America's. Same with China. China is still a very harsh a communist country, yes, but they have adopted Western and American-styled economic policies and systems of doing business, and that's how they've become, in many ways, so amazingly successful. It's gone on in Singapore. It's happened in Japan. It's happening in parts of Latin America. When people are free to produce, when they have the opportunity to work and to produce and to be productive and to use the lion's share, not all of it, we all need to pay our taxes, but when people are free to use the results of their labor, the fruits of their labor, to better themselves and their families and their households and to be charitable as they see fit, that's when a society takes off. We've lost that. Most Americans, I don't think, even believe that anymore. But other people groups in other parts of the world, they get it, and they're onto it. And India should be an inspiration to us here in the United States of America. So should Singapore and Japan, for that matter. But anyway, this is quite fascinating indeed. Christianity Today, this morning, reporting on a phenomena that Dr. Clint Jenkin divulged to us about almost a month ago now here on this program from the Barna Group. And Clint Jenkin from Barna Group says, you know, Christians don't believe it. Christianity Today is reporting it as though it is fact. Global poverty on the decline. That's something we can give thanks for. Something very, very positive. Very positive development. It's now 6:54 Central Time. You're listening to the Faith Radio Network. Glad you're with us. I'm Austin Hill. As we continue, let's take a look at what's coming up this afternoon on Faith Radio with our own Susie Larson. We'll tell you about it next. Good morning. It's 6:55 Central Time from Faith Radio. I'm Austin Hill here weekday morning 6 till 8. Live the Promise with Susie Larson happens every weekday afternoon 3 till 5 p.m. Central Time. Yesterday, Susie spoke with author Liz Curtis Higgs. They discuss what they can learn from one of Jesus' closest followers. Here's part of that discussion.
For Mary Magdalene, having been filled with demons, to willingly go into a place of the dead was spiritually risky for her.
Wow.
But there she was. And so what we see in Mary Magdalene is a faithfulness that knows no bounds. You know, John 6:66 says, the disciples all fell away, but not these women. Yeah. Jesus definitely loved women and wanted to set them free. But they actually go in, and they saw a young man dressed, so that tells us about what he looked like. He had a face, he had limbs, dressed in a white robe, sitting on the right side. And they were, subtle humor of the Bible, alarmed. They were alarmed, yeah, completely taken aback, scared out of their minds, might be right. He was like lightning, his clothes were white as snow, and of course, the guards flipped out, everybody's flipped out, the women fall down with their faces to the ground. And then the angel says, do not be afraid, to which I'm thinking, too late. It's just too late for that. And then he says, for I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. Make no mistake, he was crucified, he was dead, and he was buried. But this happy news, he is not here. So the stone couldn't hold him, death couldn't hold him, Satan couldn't hold him, and the angel couldn't hold the good news. One more minute, he has risen. So with that marvelous news, the women are so excited. They hurry back to see the disciples. I love this. And the guys don't believe them. The words seem to them like nonsense. But Mary Magdalene so bravely goes to the two guys at the top, goes to Peter, goes to John, and says, come back with me. Come see. They bravely go. They stick their heads in. Yep, he's not here. And then they go home. Isn't that interesting? They go home, not Mary. She stands by the tomb. She is crying. She looks in, and now there are two angels there. And they say something different. Why are you crying? And here's that very personal thing you mentioned. They've taken my Lord away. My Lord. And I don't know where they've put him. Okay, so she's still looking for a dead body. God bless her soul. Here's what I love about Jesus. Even if we don't get it all right, if we are looking for him, we will find him.
That's author Liz Curtis Higgs, and might I add, storyteller Liz Curtis Higgs, a guest on Susie Larson's program, Live the Promise, yesterday. Coming up on today's episode, Susie speaks with author Stephen Mansfield about his book, The Miracle of the Kurds. That's today, 3 p.m. Central Time, Live the Promise with Susie Larson here on the Faith Radio Network. It's 6:58. Good morning. I'm Austin Hill. It's Thursday. We're glad you're with us. This is the Faith Radio Network. SRN News on the way in seconds. Don't go anywhere.
Start your day connecting faith to life. It's Austin Hill in the morning.
Beautiful day. Good morning. It's now 7:04 Central Time. It's the Faith Radio Network that you're listening to. And I'm Austin Hill. Good morning and welcome. Honored to be with you. I'm here weekday morning, 6 till 8, as we seek to be informative and challenging, hopeful, helpful here at the start of your day. As we try to connect faith, our Christian faith, to every facet of our life. Yes, to our relationships, to our marriages, to our churches, to our kids and grandkids, and even those who we are in fallout with, try to heal broken, wounded relationships. We also, on this program, try to connect our Christian faith to the broader world around us. Can't afford to just ignore it and bury our heads in the sand and no longer pay attention. The world is changing rapidly, and we try to see these things through the lenses of our Christian faith. Breakpoint with John Stone Street and Eric Metaxas is on the way in just about 20 minutes from now, so stand by for that. Also, another update from SRN News at the bottom of the hour, 7:30. And in just moments, we will welcome to the program a man who was just an amazingly talented guy. I met him for the first time over the phone earlier this week. He and I have a lot of mutual friends, and I've certainly been familiar with his work for, oh, a bigger part of three decades. He probably wouldn't want to hear me saying that publicly, but we've both been around in a variety of different areas of broadcasting for a good long time. You know him as Bob Lapine. Bob Lapine, among the other things that he does, he is the anchor and the announcer, host, if you will, of the Family Life Today broadcast. And you hear Family Life Today with Bob Lapine and Dennis Rainey right here on the Faith Radio Network. Well, Bob Lapine is joining us here in moments to talk about the Weekend to Remember Marriage Getaway events that Family Life Today has been conducting. And that's quite fascinating. Well, I won't say anything more about that. We'll let Bob explain it in his own words. But Bob Lapine is my guest. He joins me next. So stand by for that. Looking for an opportunity to do a tune-up in your marriage, or you know somebody who needs that. Well, we've got some invaluable information from Bob up next. It's now 7:06 Central Time. This is the Faith Radio Network. Welcome to Thursday. We continue in moments. It's now 7:08 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. Good morning, I'm Austin Hill. It's Thursday. You've heard about it, the Weekend to Remember Getaways. They're brought to us by the Family Life Today broadcast ministry. Let's find out a little bit more, shall we? Bob Lapine is the anchor, the announcer, the host of the Family Life Today broadcast, as well as several other network broadcasts heard around the country. He joins us on our guest line. Aaron, can we have a little round of applause, please? He's finally here live, real time. Bob Lapine. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to our program.
I love a round of applause. Thank you. I don't know. I'm rarely described as an anchor. That is either something that keeps something in place or that holds it from holds it back. I'm not sure which I am. One of those two, right?
I think maybe the you are the anchor, that which important things are tethered to. How do you like that?
There you go. I like that. That's good.
Very good. Listen, good to talk to you. Tell us, you know, before we get into the Family Life Today Weekend to Remember things, you've been at Family Life Today for a mighty long time. I have enjoyed following your broadcast career over the years. How long have you been working with Dennis Rainey and company there at Family Life Today?
We launched Family Life Today back in November of 1992. So we're coming up on, we just passed 22 years together on the air. And I actually came to Family Life to help launch the radio program. So I'm about to enter my, I'm in my 23rd year, about to have my 23rd anniversary.
You're on some level, you're very entrepreneurial. I mean, that's no small ordeal, launching an entire new syndicated broadcast venture.
Well, I'll tell you, when the leadership here at Family Life started thinking about the fact that our Weekend to Remember getaways were having an impact in the lives of tens of thousands of couples, but marriage was in a state of decline in our culture, and we recognized that when you're doing battle in an area like this, it's good to be able to talk to tens of thousands of couples, but meanwhile the culture is talking to tens of millions of couples. And so launching a radio program was really a way of us saying we have got to be more proactive in providing practical biblical help to couples who are trying to make their marriages work, trying to figure out how to make a family work. And that was the impetus behind starting the program back in 1992.
Yeah, good for you. And the world has turned upside down a few times since 1992, and things are even radically different, and I would say in many ways, Bob Lapine, more challenging than they were even back in 1992. And I'm not throwing this out here and asking these questions just rhetorically. I think what family life today does is profoundly important. It's one thing to get the conversation going in a radio broadcast, and or on people's mobile phones or on the website. And Family Life Today distributes the audio content in so many different amazing ways and does such a great job for it, with it, I should say. I know your objective, and Dennis Rainey and others, is really to get these conversations going in the church. For the person who is hearing what you're saying, you know, we need to do more of that in our church, what would you tell that person?
Well, you're right about the fact that the ground has shifted over the last 20 years. When we launched Family Life Today back in 1992, we were thinking we need to provide encouragement to people who pretty much know what the right thing to do in a marriage is, and they just need encouragement and help to know how to do it. Today we're talking to people who aren't sure that what we have always assumed is the right thing to do is still the right thing to do. And that's whether you're talking to folks who are wondering about the very definition of marriage, or talking to folks or wondering about what healthy sexuality in marriage should look like. I mean, we've got phenomenon. I was just talking to a group of people this morning about the fact that the largest provider of premarital preparation in our world today is Hollywood. More young women are being trained about how to pursue a relationship with a potential husband mm-hmm. by The Bachelor than are being trained by their local church. And so what we want to do is to continue to sound the alarm for what the Bible says about how marriage and family designed by God is supposed to be lived out. And we want to strengthen marriages, but we also want to equip churches with resources mm-hmm. that they can plug people into to help strengthen the marriages and the families in their church.
Well, all very important, and we love and appreciate what Family Life Today does. Bob Lapine is the anchor, the host, the announcer for the Family Life Today broadcast. You can find their organization, by the way, at familylife.com. And Bob, specifically, we asked you to join the program here to talk about the Weekend to Remember getaway events with Family Life Today. What's the Weekend to Remember all about?
These are getaway weekends that we host for married couples and for engaged couples, by the way. The fact that we hold them in nice hotels around the country, we hope that engaged couples will come and will book separate hotel rooms, but we provide premarital training at the Weekend to Remember. We also provide married couples with a better understanding of God's design for how to make a marriage work. What we found is that, you know, you stop and think about it. When I got a job in college at a local restaurant, I had to go take a couple of classes at the county health department and get a food handler's permit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I wanted to marry my wife, I had to go get a marriage license, but there were no classes I had to take on what marriage was supposed to be about. I just paid my $35 and got my marriage license. What we're trying to do is provide the equipping, the training. What we hear from couples is we wish we'd come to something like this earlier in our marriage. I hear that from couples who've been married 20 or 30 years who come to a Weekend to Remember.
Right.
And we also hear from couples, this gave us the blueprints for how to make a marriage work that we didn't have before. So it's a weekend where couples can get away, they can be in a nice hotel, they can relax, they can refocus on their marriage, they do some projects together as couples. And by the end of the weekend, you walk out with a better sense of what your marriage is supposed to be, and maybe with a couple of action points that can take a good marriage and make it a great marriage, or can take a marriage that's struggling and give it some help to get it on the right track.
Bob Lapine from Family Life Today, the broadcast, talking to us about the Weekend to Remember getaway weekends that the Family Life Today organization is sponsoring. This all sounds very, very positive. We, of course, we want our morning program listeners to get over to familylife.com and get the info on this. Bob, you've heard it all, I'm sure. You've probably heard people maybe in your own family or in your local community, maybe your own church, and they'll say, you know, Bob, that sounds like a great idea. Maybe next year. You know, that's good, but we're so busy, or we just don't have the time and the energy right this. We don't need another thing on the calendar, Bob. Our weekends and our weekdays are just so tapped out. You've probably heard all the reasons why people cannot or will not or don't want to do this. How would you respond to that for the person who's going, yeah, that sounds great, but that's for somebody else?
I've not only heard it, but I've felt it myself, because life is busy and things come at us. And honestly, the idea of getting childcare for a weekend to get away just sounds exhausting in the first place. And can it really be good for your family if you're away from the kids for a weekend? And the way I'd respond to that is, we have to make time for the things that are important, the things that are priorities. And marriage maintenance is a neglected priority in our culture today. We do a better job of taking care of our car. More of your listeners are more fastidious about getting their oil changed every 3,000 or 4,000 miles than they are about a tune-up for their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And yet their marriage is going to go for a lifetime, and their marriage is at the center of what makes life important. So I just encourage listeners to stop and ask yourself the question, is my marriage the priority it ought to be? And when was the last time I did anything that evidenced that my marriage is a priority, other than coming home at night? What, you know, what is it that we're doing to build into? If it's been more than 2 years since you've taken any extended time to do something in favor of your marriage, let me just suggest that the original manufacturer recommends that you get in at least every 2 years for a checkup for your marriage.
Excellent suggestion. That's good advice from me, brother. Bob Lapine from Family Life Today, the broadcast, and familylife.com, the website, with some insight on the Weekend to Remember getaway event sponsored by Family Life Today. Bob, thanks so much. Great to talk to you. I hope you'll come back and jump in. And we have a place for you here on our morning program anytime you've got news for us or just want to come back and say hi. I hope you'll do it again soon.
Always great to be with you, Austin, and look forward to seeing listeners at an upcoming Weekend to Remember getaway.
You can get more info on that, of course, on our website at myfaithradio.com. It's now 7:18 Central Time from Faith Radio. Welcome to Thursday. I'm Austin Hill. Breakpoints on the way in 8 minutes. It's now 7:21 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network, and I'm Austin Hill. Thank you for being here. Thank you for joining us each and every weekday morning. I'm here weekdays 6 till 8 as we seek to be informative, challenging, hopeful, and helpful here at the start of your day. You know, I got to get to my notes here. I want to disclose to you exactly what's going on here. See these notes here in front of you? I want to be very candid here and tell you that I've been in deliberation. I've been torn. I've been struggling with this, whether or not to pose this question to you, the listener, and invite interaction on this here on the program. But I just want to give you a little sneak preview. I'm going to propose this topic, and I'll give you the question right now. We'll get to phone calls on this one in about 15 minutes from now. There are those who would say, you know, you shouldn't ask these kinds of questions. You shouldn't talk about these issues, Austin Hill. This is divisive. It upsets people. It offends people. And there's something in me that says this is an important question, and we need to get it out in the open. It's kind of the elephant in the living room, if you will, if I can use that metaphor from the world of counseling psychology. You know, it's this big, big thing that's out here in front of us. And instead of ignoring it, pretending it's not really there, I think we need to talk about it. Here's the thing, okay? Here's the elephant in the living room, if you will. And it's a question. And the question is simply this. Now, well, here's our phone number. We'll get to phone calls on this at about 7:35 this morning, about 11, 12 minutes from now. But here is the question. Is it okay to ask? Is it appropriate to wonder whether or not another person is a Christian? Is it okay to wonder, is this person next to me? Is this person in my workplace? Is this person in my classroom with me? Are they really a Christian? Is it okay to ponder that question? How would you respond to that? What do you make of that? It seems to me that that seems like a pretty straightforward, simple kind of subject. And yet at the same time, all across our country, people are stumbling over it all over the place. And I'll tell you what brings to light this question. There have been concerns raised among some as to whether or not our president, President Barack Obama, whether or not he is really a Christian. He is a professed Christian, absolutely. He comes from a, I would say, fairly theologically liberal, nonetheless a Protestant Christian church denominational history. And but this issue got raised several days ago, last week actually. Another very high-profile former elected official, the mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani, he raised questions about President Obama's love of country and patriotism, and I'm not going to get into that. But out of that, this is how far things have spun out of control with media narratives. And I am of the mindset that you and I and other thoughtful Christians in our culture today, we should not be driven by news media narratives. We shouldn't ignore them. We should pay attention to what's going on in our culture and in our country. But we need to be willing to focus in on the real, true, sincere, important questions, the crux of the matter, if you will, and not just be swayed by headlines that pull us in that this direction or that direction. Rudy Giuliani raises questions about the president's character. And from that, it gets spun out of control to where the news media is saying, some people are questioning whether President Obama is a Christian or not. If you're listening to us on our Madison affiliate, the governor of your state, Governor Scott Walker, who may or may not be running for the presidency, I don't know. Governor Scott Walker, so far as I can tell, is an evangelical Protestant Christian, based on what we see on paper, what I see emulated from him publicly. But I don't know Scott Walker, and perhaps you don't either. And we don't really know. But we know what people profess. Governor Scott Walker was asked, well, Governor, do you think President Obama is really a Christian? And Scott Walker, as far as I can tell, answered exactly the way he should. He said, I'm not the person to ask that. I'm not the final arbiter of that. If I were to be asked that question, I would take it a step further and say, that's a decision for God to make. That is something that only my creator, only God himself, really knows the answer to. I'm not here to say who truly is a Christian and who is not. However, there is, I believe, a scriptural perception, a scriptural perspective, that is, that says, you know, we can observe the fruits of one another's lives. We know one another by the fruits of our lives. We'll reference that scripturally coming up here in just a few moments. But this is, I've just been watching this play out, and I've watched people try to address the issue. Is it okay to ask if another person is a Christian? I've asked people completely ignore it. Let's be thoughtful and talk about it, shall we? We ponder this, whether we're consciously aware of it. It strikes me that we ponder this question, we mull over this question about each other. Forget the president, forget the governor, forget high-profile figures and political figures. We filter one another through this lens of, are you really a Christian or not, it seems to me, on an ongoing basis. How would you answer the question, is it okay to even ask if another person, even wonder if another person is truly a Christian? We'll talk about it coming up at about 7:35 this morning. It's now 7:26. I'm Austin Hill. This is Faith Radio that you're listening to. Breakpoint on the way next.
We want to know what you think.
Join the conversation at 877-933-2484. It's Austin Hill in the Morning.
And thank you very much, Mr. Announcer. That's Reed, by the way. He's one of our colleagues. We just call him Reed. Appreciate you lending your vocal talents, my friend. It's 736, and that is our number. It's 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. My question for you is simply this. How do you know if another person is a Christian, and is it appropriate to ask? How do you respond to that? I'm asking a question about a question. How do you like that? It's very Shakespearean of me, like, right? It's kind of like a play within a play. No, it's a question within a question, and I think it's a legitimate one. It's 877-933-2484. The reason I raise this question is because last week a very high-profile former governmental leader, Rudy Giuliani, the former mayor of New York City, he made some critical comments about President Barack Obama, having nothing to do with religion, as far as I can tell, as far as I see from accounts of Mr. Giuliani's remarks. But that touched off a debate in the news media about, well, you know, is it okay to be critical of the president? How dare he question the president? This is oh so terrible. We shouldn't ever question governmental leaders, which I think that's flawed and that's false from the get-go. We most certainly should ask questions and give input to those in elective office. But that's an aside. From that incident, there has spun just out of control, I would say, this debate about whether or not President Barack Obama is a Christian. And I see Christian news and informational publications, ChristianHeadlines.com, ChristianPost.com, ChristianityToday.com. I see all kinds of these news publications publishing different kinds of commentary and analysis. Well, is the president really a Christian? Well, it depends on how you define Christian. And I don't want to focus on the politics of this. Let's take a step backward. Let's be thoughtful about this and ask, you know, is it okay to wonder if a person is a Christian? And is it appropriate to ask in the first place? I think there are scriptural guidelines for this. And this craziness, this madness that has kind of played out in the media, even Christian news media, I just think there's a better way to go. Let's be thoughtful about this. Again, my question for you, is it okay? How do you know if another person is a Christian, and is it okay to ask in the first place? It's 877-933-2484. Lois is up next in St. Paul. Lois, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Thank you. This question is one that's been on my mind for a long time. I don't know how you can actually know if another person is a Christian or not, because how can you know their heart? Only God knows your heart. And we are deceitfully wicked. And how can we even know our own heart sometimes? You know, sometimes I do things that surprise me in a really bad way.
Mm-hmm.
By looking at a person, seeing how they live, seeing what they do, and maybe by conversation, listening to what they say, maybe you can get an idea of if they are a person, Christian or not. But I still think only God knows the heart. And I'm hesitant to make judgment on people, because if they don't have the right verbiage that I can understand, that tells me where they are spiritually, I don't really know. I'm a Protestant, and some of my Catholic friends just don't have that verbiage when we're talking about spiritual things, so that helps me understand where they stand.
Mm-hmm. Your point is well taken, Lois, and I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. I appreciated the humility with which she said, hey, listen, I can be deceitful. Sometimes I find myself thinking and doing things that are very unChrist-like, and if one were to evaluate that in and of themselves, I'll just say this for me, myself, if you were to see certain areas of my life or see me in certain moments in time, one would wonder about my faith. We're all capable of that kind of self-deception and that kind of individual flaw. As Lois was talking, I'm reminded of the many, many times that the Apostle Paul writes in some of the epistles. I'm thinking, like, for example, the First and Second Corinthians. Over and over again, the Apostle Paul calls the Christian, the individual Christian, to self-examination. Examine yourselves. 2 Corinthians 13:5, for example. Examine yourselves to see whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Now, he's writing collectively to the church as a whole, but I think if we put that in its proper context, that's a message that's imploring individuals within the church to do that. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, a man must examine himself. If we judged ourselves rightly, we would not be judged, the Apostle Paul writes. Is it okay to ask if another person is a Christian, and how do you even know anyway? It's 877-933-2484. Kim is up next in Madison, Wisconsin. Kim, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hello. I don't disagree with anything that you and the previous caller said at all, but I do have a bit of a different take. I think that in answering your question, first, I try to develop a bit of a relationship, whether it's I walk across the room at a large gathering and I see someone standing alone and I might walk across the room to talk to them. You develop a bit of a relationship. Your first thing out of your mouth isn't, I'm a Christian, are you? You know, you develop a bit of a relationship. And I think if you're sensitive to the leading of the Holy Spirit, there's an entree in which to either share your faith and then ask about theirs. So I think it's okay to ask, my bottom line is. The second thing is how do you know if someone's a Christian? Well, the Bible also says you know them, you shall know them by their fruits. Mm-hmm. So if someone says that there are many roads to heaven, well, Jesus said that he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through him. So if someone said, oh, there are many roads that lead to heaven, I don't believe in all that, that could be a tip-off. You can't judge their heart. But another one might be if someone says that Jesus is a son of God. Well, God said he was his only begotten son.
Mm-hmm.
We call him only. So if you take the words of the Bible and you know the scriptures, someone can tell you by their words whether or not they really do believe what Christ said is a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So, I wouldn't run around going, well, they don't go to church, they're not Christian. I wouldn't place that value on them. You can't assess another person's heart. Only God can.
That's well stated. Kim, thanks much. Great to hear from you. 877-933-2484. I'm using the occasion of this this whole squabble over whether or not President Barack Obama is really a Christian, and the way this has played out in political headline news. I'm using this occasion to take a step backwards and say, how do you know if another person is a Christian, and is it okay to ask? How do you respond to those questions? 877-933-2484. Tammy is up next in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Tammy, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Hi.
Hey.
I like your question about perceptions and cultures.
Yes.
I think we have a lot of... I'm trying to think. We have our Christian values kind of mixed in with what's going on in the world. And when I think about Jesus and how he loved people, he didn't put people down. He didn't, you know, he just wanted to help them and fix the problem. But he didn't put people down and say, hey, you know, you're a freak, you know. I think we have to think about where people grew up, what they've been around, and we have this perception and what we think how someone should say something or how they should think about something or whatever. But I just think there's some things that I don't agree with that I'm a Christian, and I feel like there's a lot of people that are being discriminated against that aren't Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And we're supposed to be out there evangelizing to these people, you know. And it makes it harder for us that are evangelists if we keep fighting against people. You know, we're creating a vortex.
Let me interrupt you here because we're short on time. Does loving and evangelizing those who we believe are not Christians, does that mean that we ignore the subject of sin?
No. You can say it's a sin, but I think it's the way that we're reacting to it. You know what I'm saying? It's like we don't dialogue. We just start getting crazy and weird and that type of thing.
I agree with you on that. Hey, real quick, did you call the program back a few weeks ago and say that you like heavy metal music?
Yes, Christian heavy metal music.
Okay, and does anybody ever look at you and say, man, that's weird, Tammy, what's going on?
Sure, I'm sure they do around here, but I'm from California, and my parents are from Hawaii, so, you know, hey, they can say whatever they want.
I'm not into heavy metal music, but I'm from California. I can relate. Tammy, thanks so much for the call. Great to hear from
you. Thank
you. She said that on the program. Hey, I'm a metalhead, and people think I'm weird. I appreciate her answer to the question, how do you respond to it? How do you know if another person is a Christian, and is it okay to ask in the first place? 877-933-2484. More of your calls on the way. It's the Faith Radio Network. I'm Austin Hill.
It's got me going so right.
Put on my poker.
Now, back to Austin Hill in the morning. Join the conversation by calling 877-933-2484.
7:49 Central Time from the Faith Radio Network. How do you know if another person is a Christian, and is it okay to ask in the first place? We've seen the news media, actually, and a lot of Christian news media as well, sort of spin into cultural chaos over this question. Is President Barack Obama really a Christian? And a lot of people are very upset that the governor of Wisconsin, Scott Walker, refused to answer the question. He said, that's not my purview. I talk about public policy and the governance of our country and our state, and I haven't really spent a whole lot of time questioning President Barack Obama's Christian faith. I'm using that as an example, and I just think that creates an opportunity for you and I to take a step backwards and ask the real basic question, how do you know a person is a Christian in the first place, and is it okay to ask the question? Jerry is up next in St. Paul, Minnesota. Jerry, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding. Hello, sir.
Hi, Austin. I love your approach and Governor Walker's approach that, you know, that's a hard issue that only God can really understand. The question I have to ask, you know, and I think all of our brothers and sisters of color, you know, have to wonder is why this president, when so many, when Clinton, who was, you know, caught in adultery, wasn't his faith wasn't questioned, it wasn't brought through the media and dragged around like this. I think that's a really important question for us to ask at this time.
How would you answer that question?
Well, I'm not sure. First president of color, his faith in God is questioned. He's been questioned whether or not he's an American citizen. He's been questioned whether or not he's a Muslim. It's by people like you said, like a mayor, people of status, like Mayor Giuliani. It makes me question whether anything is off the table when politics are muddy and dirty and a nasty business. But I'd have to answer the question by saying if we're going to have a woman running for public office, then we can question whether or not just the fact that she is a woman makes her somewhat disqualified or something like that. You know, I mean, I don't know what's not fair anymore.
I don't know. You're asking very important questions. What should we not ask about those who want to make laws and rule over our lives?
Yeah,
I'm not just saying that rhetorically. How would you answer that? What is inappropriate to ask from those who want to exercise enormous authority and power over your life? We're free to pose any kind of question we want for all intents and purposes, unlike the early Christians in ancient Rome, who lived under a totalitarian, authoritarian government that all traced back to one guy. I mean, what is inappropriate for questions for those who want to exercise enormous power over our lives?
Well, I would say this, that as believers in Christ Jesus, we're held to a higher standard. And And we as Christians, we trust the outcome to Christ. And so we respect the dignity of an office because we know that God puts people over us. And we also trust the dignity of a human being. And we have brothers and sisters of faith. And so we go, I don't want to say anything, even though I have, but, you know, Paul said, I have the right, but everything is not beneficial. You know, I have the right to do this because I'm free, but everything is not beneficial for me. And I don't think it's beneficial to question this president's Christianity especially since he's the first president of color that we've ever had. That if we question this president, then we say more about ourselves than we do about him. We say more about our society, and we say more about our faith in Christ. You know, Christians have done things that blowing up abortion clinics and things like that. So-called Christians have done things like that,
yeah.
And it says something to the rest of the world about our faith.
Okay. And Jerry, Alyssa, I appreciate the call. It's good to hear from you. I hope you'll jump in again. I think it's incumbent upon us to be thoughtful, respectful, but to ask questions. But we should continue that another time. Deo is up next in Duluth, Minnesota. Deo, thanks for holding your own with Austin Hill. It's the Faith Radio Network. Good morning. Is Deo with us? Okay. Deo. Deo is in St. Paul. I'm sorry. Deo, welcome, sir. Hello.
Deo, yeah. Yeah, I think it's okay to ask. My passion is sharing my faith with people. And, you know, in a gentle way, you know, even with people that I go to church with, I ask questions. And, you know, I think we can find out by asking questions. And it's not to judge, it's to find out to help somebody move forward in their faith. But I think that the basis of faith is believing in the Apostles' Creed. I mean, that's been the basis since the 5th century or the 3rd century.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, we can ask those questions, like I said, not in a position of judgment, but to find out where somebody is, so maybe we can help them along in their understanding and their commitment to Christ.
So it is okay to ask if a person is a Christian and to contemplate that as you see it.
In a gentle way and with the right attitude. I mean, if asking Obama if he's a Christian, I mean, you know, whoever asking those questions isn't doing it in a helpful way. I mean, it's all about politics. But if you're in a personal relationship with a person who's searching and wanting to know God, well, then those questions are appropriate. I mean,
all right. Deo, I appreciate the call. Thanks much. Listen, truth be told, I think just as Deo is describing it, we think these things through all the time. And but that's why I'm posing the question. Is it okay to ask if another person is a Christian? Brad is up next in Minnesota. Brad, thanks for holding your own with Austin Hill. It's Faith Radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Austin. Say, I apologize, but I'd like you to think of the question in a little bit different way, if I may. You know, you make it sound like you're either a Christian or you aren't, like it's a pass-fail, like it's like everybody should just strive to do them. That's kind of a minimalist attitude, I would argue. I don't think there's any of us that know God so well or are so close to Him that we can't be closer.
Yep. And Brad, I tell you what, with that in mind, I agree with you completely. I don't like the pass-fail approach at all. And with that, I'm short on time and I got to run. To be continued. See you tomorrow morning at 6. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Austin Hill in the Morning. For more information about this, you can visit Austin Hill in the Morning, our program page, on myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com.